Wow, what an amazing session. We have an SMX special here and we're talking about how we rank videos on Google, on AI search. We are talking about how AI search is being impacted by videos. And we're talking about how the whole video creation industry is being changed, but how important humans are still going to be and what their skill set needs to be. So this is what we're talking to about with Phil Nottingham. And my name is Timon Hartung and I'm the founder of Voxo. And this is our show and we're going to have a lot of fun talking about YouTube videos and AI search. So let's go.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Hier hörst du Insights zu Digital Marketing Strategien und Technologien. Viel Spaß bei dieser Folge.
Yes, so welcome back to our SMX Advanced special podcast. Today we're absolutely thrilled to be joined by a true visionary in the world of video marketing. Our guest has a fascinating journey starting in technical theater and film production. So he's not an online marketer, you know, from the ground up, but he is actually a specialist in the field of video. And that much makes it so much interesting because he has the ability to actually understand how great film is made. And he's consulted on video strategy for some of the biggest brands in the world and globally and produced content generating millions of views. And he's also a renowned expert in the video SEO industry and YouTube marketing and brand strategy. And he's also the founder of Organic Video, an agency dedicated to helping businesses leverage the power of video for, you know, more views, more conversions. And yeah, he is absolutely brilliant. And I've had the honor of moderating a few times him at SMX. And welcome, Phil Nottingham.
Thank you very much for the illustrious introduction, Timon.
Of course. No, it's always been a pleasure to, hear you speak about video and video SEO and how to, you know, use videos properly, because I think it's one of the things that has been ignored by so many companies to use this properly to really make a lot of, you know, impressions, but also money from this. And if we look back at the internet started as text, then pretty quickly images were around, and then video took a long time, you know, and we have a lot of videos now, but still, it's still taking a long time for companies to jump on the video bandwagon to actually, you know, it's, they say it takes 1,000 words to describe one image, but it takes also like 1,000 images to describe 30 seconds of video, you know, and it's, it just makes things so much clearer. And I think a lot of companies are just missing this huge opportunity to use video.
Yes. It will not surprise you to know that I agree. I think that the growth of video online, I suppose, has been initially just stymied by technology. So, you know, we needed significant bandwidth to be able to stream video, to be able to upload it, produce it. And as the last sort of 15 years, the technology to edit things has improved dramatically. And now in the last year or two with AI really ramping that up, the level of effort required to produce something is just so much less than it used to be that it enables the proliferation of content online. But I agree that even despite that, most businesses are sort of a bit slow off the mark. And I think this has to do with more of an emotional thing than a rational thing. So I think it's because when you're writing text or you're doing images or something, it somehow feels less personal. But there's something that's very visceral about making a video that, if it's bad, you kind of feel a level of embarrassment about it, I think. So many businesses are sort of like, well, we have to get this right. If we're going to do video, it has to be good and it has to be perfect. Because if we produce something that's lower quality, it's going to show us up in a bad light. So there's a sort of fear associated with that, whether that's sort of animated things or whether it's, you know, just talking head kind of content. I think there's a fear of it not being good enough or it feeling so personal and so sort of intimate in a sense. I think because it relates more to the way in which we actually speak to each other as human beings, that many people are reluctant to do it. And you see this even in like the sales world, where you'd think that's such a basic thing, sales videos, you just make a video. Most salespeople are reluctant to do this. And that's clearly just on an emotional level, it feels more personal and they want the barrier of email and phone in some sense. So I think that's the core thing to break through now in order to adopt this at a greater scale, is getting over some of that concern that I think the older generation have, that maybe the younger generation don't have as much, because they're sort of video natives, if you like. You know, most of their social media content is just filmed stuff for Instagram and all the rest of it. So I think there's a generational aspect to this, but also just understanding what video means for a business is not necessarily that personal. And it actually, the worst thing that happens is you make something bad, nobody watches it, rather than it kind of being a big reputational risk. But it takes a sort of mindset shift to get over that.
But does it have to be that perfect? I mean, obviously, we all grew up with Hollywood movies, which are pretty much perfect, especially if you go past the 2000s. They've been incredibly made. But does it have to be so perfect for a company? Because I always have the feeling that authenticity beats quality. And I mean, obviously, for a huge company, maybe like Nike or Apple, yes, it has to be perfect. But for smaller companies, I mean, doesn't it? Isn't there also a huge opportunity to just make authentic content?
Absolutely. I think the key thing, and particularly in a world of what we're moving towards, of just easy to proliferate, very polished looking AI content, authenticity is all that really matters. So it has to be genuine, authentic, thoughtful, tied to the individuals that are making it, and the businesses, and a sort of true representation of who you are. And that's always going to cut through far better than anything that's just highly polished. So yeah, again, it's getting past that fear of thinking, well, things need to be really good. No, they just need to be honest. And actually, that will get you most of the way. But yeah, again, that's a bit of a mindset shift for many businesses, where they think kind of, well, if we're doing something that's for our brand, it needs to be super polished, and it needs to be on brand, and it needs to have all our colors and our mark. Like, all that stuff doesn't matter. The thing that really matters is just the authenticity and the honesty and the fair representation of who you are.
Yeah, then we have a really interesting topic now, because of the AI coming in the space, and, you know, VO3 making it super easy to make high quality 8-second clips right now. But let's go into the future, 12 months, maybe 18 months, then we'll be able to do 1 minute. And it's going to be incredibly cheap to create amazing videos, which are not going to be indistinguishable from real content. How do you see that developing? I mean, that's do you see, like, you know, big companies placing bans on AI content, or do you see something else happening? Because at the end of the day, everything's going to be possible for the good and the bad.
Yeah, I guess I see it as, it's like we have a brand new filmic language that's arrived. And in much the same way that CGI sort of changed the game in film, and enabled so much more sort of creative, expansive shots, we're going to have the same sort of thing, but at a much, much greater scale. So now you can just imagine something with a computer and you can build it. You can take something that has a green screen and an individual, and you can put them anywhere in the world. So things that would previously have cost millions of dollars to make, you can now, you'll be able to just do, which is incredible for, like, expanding the palette of creative language that filmmakers can use. So I think that's going to be the main big change, and particularly in kind of artistic creative shots, particularly for ads. Like, you know, really, the sky's the limit, and you don't need to think necessarily so limited about budgets and what you can shoot. And so I think that's going to be the big change. I think that there's a view that things will be indistinguishable. I'm not entirely convinced by that, because I look back to history. And if we think again of the sort of CGI revolution, I remember when those Star Wars prequels came out and they were, like, all done with green screens and CGIs, and everyone at the time thought, wow, this looks amazing. You know, it looks so realistic. And you watch them now and they look awful. And this is true. Whereas something like Jurassic Park, that relied primarily on, big models and sort of real in-camera shooting, things like that, has sort of in a way held up better as bits of film. So I think that what we'll find is that as we start seeing more AI content, our brains and our eyes become a little bit more attuned to seeing what's going on. And I think we'll have a better view on that. So I'm not sure that we won't notice. I think it will just be, we kind of become educated and start to understand that filmic language better. But I do think it's also going to, I mean, it's going to radically change a huge amount of things. It's going to change the editing workflow. It's going to change the nature of computer-generated imagery in a huge way. It will mean, like, just tweaking things, adjusting stuff that maybe didn't come out that well in camera will be easier. So I'm very positive on it overall. There's obviously some concerns around, like, you know, just fabrication, intellectual property theft, stealing different actors' identities, making things that are not accurate for political reasons, etc. But I mean, all that's currently happening just with very, very simple filmic techniques, and we aren't that clever. So I'm not sure that AI is going to change the game so much in that regard. I think we're already in that world. But I do think the other thing to flag about AI filmmaking is that it's not going to replace the most sort of common use. So for example, and if you're doing like a product review video or like a lecture or something, or a lot of the stuff that really is the mainstay of content on YouTube for both businesses and creators, like that stuff is not going to be heavily augmented by AI, because AI is never going to improve that content, because what matters, as we were mentioning earlier, is the authenticity. So stuff where authentic, genuine people on camera is a better, more sort of connected experience than AI. I don't think AI is going to really have a huge role, probably in the editing process, maybe a little bit in like polishing and tidying up, but it's not going to, generative AI is not going to be the mainstay of this content. So I don't see the death of cameras. I don't see any of that. I think it's just, we've got a different language that's come into existence very, very quickly that's going to radically change how we can think about what we can do. And I think ultimately that's very exciting, and it's a great place to be for creatives. It's a worrying place to be for people, because you're going to have to learn new skills. You're going to have to think a bit more creatively. And for brands, I think one of the things you can think about is, if you're creating an ad, the cost of sort of creating new bits of creative, like the marginal cost of a new idea, is going to be much less than it used to be. So what you can do is basically decide to go to market with 5 different executions and test them and see what works, in a way that previously you probably would have had to have just committed to a execution, paid all this money for distribution, then find out it doesn't work. So that allows you to be a lot more, I suppose, data-driven, in the sense that you can try stuff out, see what worked, doesn't work, go back to the drawing board, try new stuff out at a relatively low cost, which means you can try more stuff, and that allows you, in a sense, to be a bit more open in your creative approaches and feel less constrained by risk and cost and limitations.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's the biggest chance that we always had in advertising as well, just to be able to test more and also be more crazy. So I think that's one of the really interesting things. Like, it was very difficult to produce a really crazy ad. Now it's really easy, right, to create. Like, it's not going to be authentic or real right now, but it's going to be out of this world, right? It's going to be a horse jumping over the moon, spinning into a boat, and then driving away with the guy from Old Spice or something like that. And it's going to be a crazy ad, right? But it's going to be interesting, because they can test, and obviously what they can do as well. And I really think that's also interesting, is you can actually make one ad, which is really good, and then localize it with a few prompts to the specific localities. And I don't mean just language, but I also mean like style. So you can make it look more German, or you can make it look more Mexican, you know, from Mexico or Latin American style. And I think that's really interesting, because that can make a huge difference in how people perceive the ads as well. And I think there's huge opportunity. But I also read something which is really interesting, that YouTube is demonetizing AI content on the platform. So anything that's created AI is now not being monetized. What do you think about that?
I haven't looked into the full details on this yet, but I suspect what they're trying to do is reduce sort of low quality stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of it about. So I think that it's not going to be a blunt instrument that means that anything created with AI as a bit of the technology that's used to build the video means that it's no longer valuable. What they're trying to do is just get rid of stuff that's really low grade, easy to churn out rubbish. So, but that doesn't mean that you can't use AI creatively and thoughtfully, and you still should. And when you're doing that, it's not going to trigger those algorithmic parts, because, you know, Google doesn't know and it can't know. So it's really about trying to reduce spam and low quality stuff. So that's really what's going on there. And it's part of that continuation of things they've been doing for a long time. So I don't see that as a radical change. But, you know, if you're using AI to create great, really interesting, fun, creative films, there's loads of that on YouTube, and it's doing very well. So, I think that there may be some things caught in the crossfire there, but I'm sure that, you know, over time, this will all even out and be, you know, I'm confident they will find a way to deal with that rationally.
Oh yeah, they have to. I mean, I think it's always a good sign when they put something up like that. It's more like a stop sign to prevent, you know, more spam flooding the platform, because the problem obviously is, I can't remember the number right now, but it's millions of videos are uploaded every minute. And if you can reduce the ones you don't want to show, and it's the same for Google, you know, for SEO, they do a lot of this as well. So they try to stop, you know, garbage content flooding the internet. And obviously that makes a lot of sense. And then at some point they'll do some watermarking or something like that in videos to identify them easier. But yeah, I think it's a positive how they're doing it right now.
For sure. The other thing I was just thinking about as you were talking earlier is the idea of like this hyper-personalization with the ads and being able to be specific with that and being able to kind of do really crazy, wild creatives. We're definitely in that moment right now where that's the sort of the current trend. And I think that what we'll find, as we often find, is that these trends are sort of cyclical. And that this will be the thing where we get hyper-personalized, hyper-localized. Yeah. But ultimately, there's another side of advertising that people want a shared experience that they can talk about. And if your ad experience is so different to everybody else, you're not necessarily going to have that word of mouth aspect that comes with it. And so I think there may then be a pushback to going to, okay, everybody's making these crazy videos, where all this wild stuff happens and it's totally outside the realm of what we previously could have shot. And then it's obviously looks AI. And that when everything looks like that, there's going to be then a backlash to go, well, can we do something different? So things then may come back around and people wanting to do more unique, individual, great sort of cinematic creative again that is perhaps less AI reliant. So all this stuff, advertising, I think, is always in conversation with the culture. And the culture at the moment is like loving experimenting with this stuff. But, you know, if we look forward 3-4 years, it may well be very different. And it will look obvious in hindsight, but you can mark this in the ground and say, I think that the current trend of what we're doing with AI will probably not be what it looks like in 4 or 5 years' time.
That's something really interesting you just mentioned, how a group wants to talk about the same things again. And I think that is something that mainstream TV had many years ago. So there were these certain shows that everybody was watching. I guess one of the big ones was Lost, Lost, the show, the TV series. And obviously you had in the UK, you have Coronation Street or something like that. And in Germany you have Lindenstraße.
Yeah.
So these were and obviously all the derivatives of this. And I remember a time when in Germany there was something called TV Total, which they tried to redo, but it failed. But this, everybody in the playground at school was talking about this. Yeah. Every day, everybody's talking about what happened in that, and they were discussing this. And this has totally vanished because less people are watching mainstream TV. And the only things I see people still talking about is football games and other sporting events. Everything else is kind of like everybody's in their own bubble on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting that you said that because it's hyper-personalized, right? I only get my topics on YouTube and my friends only get their topics on YouTube. And we have so little crossover. So I actually agree. And I think that hyper-personalization gets you so disconnected that at some point you want this connection again, that you get something to talk about with people you want to get to know, because otherwise there you have no connection point. You know, humans are always trying to, that's why when you meet somebody new, you're always like, where you come from? How old are you? How many kids do you have? To find similarities to get something to talk about, to become friends or familiar with that person.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, it's impossible. That's why I still think Netflix is an important role, because they push out these big, big TV shows that everybody watches and everybody can talk about.
Yes, exactly. Well, I remember thinking, it must be about 10, 12 years ago now, when Netflix sort of started producing its own original content. Maybe it was a bit earlier than that. House of Cards, I think it was. That they did a thing that was quite revolutionary at the time, where they would just dump all the content in one go. And that was like, you can binge watch it. Wow. And that was a thing you never could do before. And then that became the commonplace. The stuff would just be released at once and everyone would binge it. And then they found, well, actually, we're not getting the kind of word of mouth aspect of that. So then HBO went back to sort of, well, we're going to just release stuff once a week. And then Netflix started to do that with. So now we're back to releasing one episode a week. But there was a period. So there's definitely that aspect of like trying to build that conversation. And like you said, sports, politics now are the kind of the conversational market markers. And then there's a few series that break through that have that kind of level of sort of cultural zeitgeist. But it's a funny old world where that has definitely changed. And YouTube has changed that to make things more personalized. And everybody's kind of just doing their own thing and having their own combination of stuff that they watch that maybe they don't talk to each other as much about.
Yeah. That's definitely very interesting. But let's talk a bit about your session at SMX Advanced in Berlin. And it's September, right?
Yes.
So this is going to be a really interesting session. You're going to be talking about using AI-generated videos for ad campaigns.
Yeah.
And without spoiling too much, tell us a bit what the session is going to be about and what's happening in that space. Because I think I mean, I see one vision how ads are going to change, like the whole ad space is going to change with AI, that at the end of the day, and Mark Zuckerberg has said this, we basically just have to give Facebook our URL and they will create everything else and just optimize until we're making money.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a dream, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, there's two things. Firstly, I think there's no risk of me giving it away because things are changing so fast in the world of AI generated video that I'm probably going to have to re-plan the talk and everything next month and the month after.
Yeah.
I did an AI generated ad campaign, a few months ago that now at the time I was like, this is really cutting edge. It now looks horribly out of date. And the actual AI models, and you watch the video now and you're like, okay, but AI, this is... that looks really old-fashioned, which is so funny just because the models are changing so fast. And that was before VO3, and it was done with mostly Midjourney. And so it's a wild place where the assumptions are being broken down every month and you're having to rethink stuff. So yeah, I'm going to kind of go through the way to think about this, the great tools to use at the moment, how to sort of structure and plan out an AI campaign, how to do kind of multiple assets and think about this creatively. So that's going to be kind of the overall approach of the session. I'm going to, talk through some examples that I've worked on, look at where AI works, where AI, maybe isn't the right tool. And yeah, try to sort of break down and offer some practical advice for getting started for someone who maybe hasn't done an AI generated video ad campaign yet. In terms of Mark Zuckerberg, I actually think I can see why he has that vision. I think it's slightly wrong. And I think that they will discover that they need to think slightly differently because, I mean, I have a philosophical view on this, which is that if you think about what creative, what art is, it's the to get a little bit too academic on this, it's the selective recreation of reality according to an artist's metaphysical value judgments. What does that mean? It's like a vision of the world made by the artist. And what you need for that is firstly the selective recreation. So choosing what to be in, tidying things up, rebuilding it. AI is great at that. AI does selective recreation. That's what it does. It takes all the stuff it has, boom, 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 on the web, and it kind of rebuilds something on that basis based on a prompt. What it needs is the value judgment. And the value judgment is taste. It's a view. It's a vision. It's a perspective. And AI can't have that because it doesn't have senses. It doesn't have experience in the world. It's not able to kind of be in existence the same way we are. It's not living. And because of that, it doesn't have a kind of a value judgment. It doesn't have values in the same way. And you need that experience. You need senses in order to form aesthetic taste, basically. Aesthetic ties to the senses. You need the experience to have a taste. And you need the cognitive aspect that goes along with that. So where I think what will happen is in that world of Facebook where you just upload, you just say, hey, here's my goal and my ad, go and build the thing. It's going to come up with something that it's going to make for everybody. And stuff starts to look really generic and similar. And at that point, what you really need is great creative vision that can do something a bit different, that requires a human brain, it requires taste, it requires creative direction. So I think that we're going to find that creative directors and creative strategists are more valuable than ever rather than less valuable. So I don't see a world in which the AIs and Facebook and all the rest are able to automate the full creative process. Now, of course, I would say that because I am a part of my role, the creative director. But I do think that we're going to find that you can't automate an AI your way to amazing experiences because ultimately great creative experiences are about connecting people to people. And you need that creative vision, the selective judgment that's going to be an important part of good creative execution going forward.
Yeah, I see the same. So I think like when I look at AI, what I see AI being really good at is creating when you have something really mediocre or bad, to create it to a good normal, right? So you have this bell curve, right? Where here you have excellence and here you have really bad quality. AI always gets it to the middle, like really good middle.
Yeah.
And I think Disney will be absolutely amazed how if they put all their scripts except for a few exceptions, into the AI, they'll be able to churn out the most amazing variations of the same script over and over again. And I think Michael Bay will also be very impressed how he can create an action movie for each facet that has not been created yet. But otherwise, if you look at Christopher Nolan, who's been creating like the movies Interstellar and also some other fascinating movies like what's called Inception, right? this, I do not see AI creating any sort of this, because this is just so crazy and genius. And I agree. It's always been something that really popped off in the internet, in marketing or in movies or in creativity. It was always something that was not, had not been imagined before. Mm. And I do not see AI imagining things that have not been there before. This might come, but I don't see it in the creative sense. I see it more like in a scientific sense, that the AI will be the first to try so many combinations to find a medicine that has not been tested before and be able to, you know, save a lot of lives. But in the creative process, I still think humans are really interesting. And but yeah, AI is just amazing at recreating and, you know, recombinating.
That's true. So that's where it is at right now. I do think that AI will get to the point of making things that are exceptional. But here's the kicker. It's going to take human beings to recognize what is exceptional and what isn't. And the AI is not going to have that judgment. So it's a case of, when, I mean, I've noticed this with some of my processes. You'll spend ages refining prompts, you'll tweak stuff. And sometimes the AI will produce an absolute gem and you're like, wow, it's got it. Yeah. There's something amazing that's come here. But it takes you as the sort of the conductor of this AI, in a sense, to be able to go, yes, that's the bit I want. That's the thing I want. So you have to be like, it's about being really picky and very focused and very like decisive, I think, as a creative, when you're working with AI, to know what it is you're looking for and to sort of see it, to get it when you see it. And AI doesn't have that judgment. It's not able to say, this thing that I made here is better than this thing that I made here. It's probably just, it's reacting and coming up with stuff. So the thing to find that brilliance is always the human judgment. But the AI is, I mean, I don't know if you play with Suno, but I love it. It's really fun.
No,
I mean, it's a copyright nightmare and there's a lot of legal issues with it, but it's an AI song generator. And sometimes the melodies that it comes out with are amazing. And I will be humming along the next day to a song that I just used, it made with AI the previous day and nobody else has ever heard. And you think, that's really cool. And it's amazing to see where that's going to go next. But you know, there's also a lot of concerns about that, I think, justifiably so, and how that kind of impacts the sort of, you know, creative licensing and the sort of legal aspect of other people's content, because it's just trained on the sort of corpus of music that's out there in the world. But what it comes up with is really quite amazing. And I'm sure songwriters will start using this going forward to like just road test ideas. I've got a little bit here that I need something better for. Give me a bunch of options. So it's always about that. Like, give me options is, I think, what AI, the way to think about AI. And then it will come with you the options, and then you have to be decisive in picking it. And I think as we go forward, it's going to be amazing at doing stuff that like is groundbreaking, but it's going to take us to recognize what is and isn't really good.
Yeah, talking about the recognition, I think that's a really important aspect. Thinking about media being media competent, right? Mm. And I think that's the skill that the next generation really needs, is not per se being able to, you know, in a camera perspective, be the best cameraman or be the best sound technician, but to be able to understand, is this real or is this not real, or is this exceptional or not exceptional? So I think like being able to, and this is a skill we all developed using the internet. We're all really good at 10 blue links, clicking on them and then deciding, oh, this is relevant, this is not relevant. You know, we're really fast researchers, right? Everybody's this is not interesting, bam, 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 gone. Now with AI, you get one answer and now you have to decide, is this true or not true? Uh-huh. And hallucinations are, well, in video, they're not such a big problem because you see it directly, but in information, they are a big problem because the information is 90% correct, but the last 10% are not correct. And I did a podcast about this last week. So it's just a very simple example. I tried to reset an iPad, right? Just to totally recover it. And I gave the AI, and I did it with ChatGPT and Gemini, I gave them both the specific model number and everything, and year and everything. And they gave me answers, but there was one part missing. When I had to take off my finger off one of the buttons, they didn't say that, and I couldn't recover it. And then on the Apple documentation, it said that. Mm. And that was very easy. But you see, like, this part was missing. And if I would have just taken this, because I didn't know. I've done it many times, but I didn't know that this part was missing. Mm. And if I would have taken this information, copied it into the Apple manual, and then had that printed 100,000 times, that would have been very wrong. But you see, that is something that obviously on a, you know, bigger extent can be problematic. And I think that's something where we have to learn to be very vigorous in understanding, is this information real or is it not real?
Yeah.
And I think that's the next skill. So the same as you said, like, seeing, is that something exceptional or not?
Yeah. And I, I suppose the analogy that's often cited that maybe is not a terrible one is the advent of the printing press, where Gutenberg, you know, produced this thing, and then people are pumping out all this different documentation, and it goes around to the peasants of the land, and everybody's reading stuff. They don't know; they're unable to determine what's true and what's false.
Exactly.
So, you know, we're in this kind of world again. Now we've heightened ourselves to be able to say, you know, you get a blog post that you clearly have identified, this feels spammy, but that took a long time for us to sort of culturally build an understanding. I mean, I say a long time, like 20 years, but which in the grand scheme of things is not a long time. But we'll find the same thing comes on with AI, where we just need to become literate, essentially. And it's going to be a big cultural challenge, I think, to understand that, like you say. But and I don't know how it's going to manifest, and I don't know. You know, I do worry that what we found with AI so far is that what we seem to do is just assume what's true based on our own prior assumptions. And we're not very good at actually being objective. And I think most people don't understand what that means as a process. And, you know, that's a cultural problem as much as anything. But yeah, it's a big concern. And the iPad example is obviously, you know, pretty innocuous, because you found out. But what if people are getting bad advice on taking medicine, or, you know, all this stuff?
Exactly.
It's deeply worrying. Yeah.
But let's jump to search. How important are videos for SEO?
Very important, because for a huge number of queries, the only thing that's going to rank is video. So if you're not making a video, you ain't ranking. And obviously, yeah, video search is a significant part of the algorithm. YouTube is just getting bigger and bigger. The way in which, you know, Google serve YouTube videos across multiple different queries. I mean, the way I've thought about it recently, or tried to break this down, is, okay, so there's something like 14 billion searches on Google every day, and about 1 billion on YouTube. Okay, so you might say, well, YouTube is maybe 14th the size of Google, which feels kind of maybe to our gut about right. But then you've got to think of, hold on, there's a whole bunch of, what's the most searched for thing on Google? Is YouTube. And then there's a whole bunch of queries that actually are just delivering YouTube results, pretty much, or certainly the first 10 are all like YouTube results. So at which point you go, well, maybe YouTube is at that level. It's like, okay, well, YouTube is like a third of the size of Google. But then you remember that YouTube has a discovery mechanism outside of search, with just, you know, subscriber feeds and the sidebar and all the sort of the homepage stuff. So when you include all the views that are captured by that, you know, you find that YouTube itself, this is only, you know, okay, the biggest video platform, only one of them, might drive half as much influence as Google. And then if we think about, okay, well, then there's also TikTok, and there's Facebook, and there's just videos on your website, and there's a whole bunch of other channels. You know, you can start to see that video as a media platform, as a type, might require, have as much engagement on it as text and images. So if you're actually only doing text image stuff, you might be cutting off about half of your potential reach. So it's enormous. And it's sort of striking to what I was saying at the beginning of the conversation, that many businesses are still not doing it, largely out of fear, largely out of just not really knowing what to do, because it's a huge amount of money and influence and reach that they're leaving on the table as a consequence.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I always think it's fascinating that it is talked about, but not as much. Like, everybody understands Google is important. Now everybody's talking about AI is coming, you know, AI is coming. But if you look at number two in the searches, it's YouTube. YouTube is the second biggest search engine globally. And
yeah, everyone's worried about ChatGPT. Nobody's messing around with YouTube. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's because people don't want to do hard things, and video is hard and it takes time. Whereas if you can just think you can tweak a few bits of metadata, and then you're going to be ranking and get all the good stuff, it's an easier answer.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is actually something that is hard, to rank on YouTube, like being recommended on YouTube. And what do you think is like the most important things to do to be ranking well on YouTube?
I guess there's three core things. One is make sure that you are optimizing your video metadata for the topics that you want to be visible for. So that means essentially doing a bit of research to start with, to work out where the actual demand is on YouTube. And I've got a methodology for this, which I sort of shared at a conference a few months ago at SEO Week in New York. for finding the median monthly view velocity for a given topic on YouTube. And this is far more important than keyword volume, which isn't really a thing on YouTube. So if you go and get the data on like how many, what's the average number of views that a video on a given topic gets, and then compare that across the board, you're going to be able to then choose the topics that you want to optimize for and you're making content for. So that's number one, is just like find out where the demand is and meet that demand. The other thing is start to think about the four S's. So there's subscribers, there's suggested videos, there's search, and then there's shorts. And those are kind of four areas in YouTube that you need to be getting views from. So you can get, if you get the topics right, you'll get the search aspect. You then need to have really good titles and thumbnails to get the suggested aspect. You have to have a format that's repeatable and is going to encourage subscribers to come back because they're going to want more of the same kind of content. So make sure that you've got that kind of level of focus and positioning to you're optimizing for that. And then make sure that you're also using those longer form videos to create shorts. So those are kind of how you generally get views and how you get ranking on YouTube. The other kind of key metrics to care about optimizing for are impression click-through rate. And that is essentially the metric that tells you when somebody sees your thumbnail and title, how often they click it. And you want to make sure that's as high as possible. As a very, very rough benchmark, 4% and above is where you want to be getting. Higher for some queries, but anything lower than that is probably very low. And then retention. So are people sticking around and watching, or are they in the graph? Are they quickly dipping away? And there's no way you can fix videos that have low retention. So you have to make sure that you're, you know, doing good editing, good creative, making sure that the video is really exciting to start with in order to capture people's attention and keep them coming back. So the combination of the framing that comes from the title and the thumbnail and the actual content offered that's shown through that, the first sort of, you know, segment of the video, the first 10, 15 seconds are the key things that you need to do to capture attention and get people watching. And if you've got that, then you're going to start to rank and be visible.
Yeah, I love that. That's why we're going to do the intro at the end. So I can, you know, really capture the audience with what we've been talking about. Yeah, it's one of the things really to do that. It's interesting how different it is. And I see that keywords do play a role in title and meta description, but it's more about really like, you know, giving the people what they want. So I see a lot of videos with questions, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so the question that is asked, they try to answer it with the video.
Yeah.
And I see that working well, I assume, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the keywords aren't important. That doesn't matter. The overall topics are what you're making stuff about matters, but how you frame it in terms of the keywords doesn't matter. Google is smart enough now by some distance to be able to work that out. So it's a case of just like, yeah, creating very clickable titles and thumbnails, questions, open the loop, you know, open that cognitive thing where there's, oh, I need to find out more, offering a clear solution to a problem, whatever it might be. So yeah, there's different approaches to get good titles and thumbnails, but yeah, you need to capture that intent for clicks rather than worrying about the keywords.
And how important are subscribers? Because I've seen that getting subscribers on YouTube has become more and more hard over the years than it has been in past years.
Very, very important for a few reasons. One is like, you need to build up that audience base who are going to watch your content regularly and engage regularly. Because if you have high levels of subscriber engagement, you're going to get more visibility across the rest of YouTube.
Okay.
So it's very important to have an engaged subscriber base. The raw subscriber count is not as important as just like how engaged your actual subscribers are. So again, it comes to having good value proposition, good quality, you know, content, and making sure that you're connecting with subscribers in a meaningful way rather than just trying to get that view count up and trying to get that subscriber count up, because that's not really the thing that's ultimately going to help. So make sure that when you have subscribers that they have high retention rate, that they're watching your stuff regularly. But yeah, it's also important for the overall sort of visibility of your channel, the level at which you're going to capture more subscribers. You know, it's much easier to get the second 10,000 than the first 1,000 subscribers. So,
yeah,
you know, things really do compound fast when you get going. So yeah, subscribers is the core engine, I think, of a good YouTube channel, is it has a large number of subscribers. So yeah, that's the key thing. If you're going to optimize for one metric, it's subscriber acquisition.
So that's why if you like this content, you should definitely subscribe to this channel.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
And help us out.
Because you've got the repeatable format, you're going to get more content like this. And if you find it valuable, there we go.
Exactly. So looking at AI, how important is video for AI and AI search?
It is important because particularly YouTube in this regard, you know, both ChatGPT and Gemini and all these others and Claude are using YouTube as a source to get information. So if you want them to include your information in all the results, you kind of need to be visible on YouTube with that information so they can find it. So video is important in that it's used a lot to determine the results for AI overviews, for results, and therefore it needs to be visible. That it'll be I'm sure in the fullness of time that will apply to videos on your website as well. Just using, you know, Schema, you can, there will be the ability to crawl and find that content. So yeah, it's a huge part of the equation. And if you want to be sort of owning the mind share, you need to be providing the data that goes into the AI. So yeah, that means creating videos and distributing largely on YouTube.
Yeah, I see that as well. Like, I feel that the AI is pulling the transcripts from YouTube and just, you know, ingesting them and then just, you know, learning through videos a lot.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. And there will come a time, and we're not yet there yet, but we are certainly going to be at the point soon, I imagine, where the AI will cut up segments of videos. So if you could say to Gemini or whomever else, all right, I want, like, you know, I've got a bunch of problems in my iPad, to use your example. Yeah. Cut me all the best, like, give me a quick segment of all the best videos that have details on how to fix this. And it will composite you a video that is little clips from all these other videos that brings together how to do it. So again, it's that sort of way that it's using text now to amalgamate answers. It could easily do that with video. It could easily take all those things and then create a video on the fly that was a mix of all the stuff that's on this subject that tells you how to do it. And I don't see why we won't be in that world soon, because it's at the moment, the barrier to doing that is simply a processing power and, you know, just scalability issue, but it can do it. So a world in which an AI generated video is the answer to a query, we're not far away from that at all. And it could even be a place where, you know, nobody's made a video on a given query that you have, and the AI goes and makes one for you.
Oh man, I love
which
that.
Which would be amazing, but it would also be very disruptive.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that, but that's amazing. That's like it is right now. They're cutting up different content from text and showing that to us and not referencing any web pages. And they can do that the same with video, not referencing any original content. Which is, I mean, they will have to solve that problem as well at some point. And they will, I'm sure. There's going to be a giving back part to video creators and giving back to text creators.
Yeah.
But I love that idea.
And there's a world in which, I mean, that might not happen for a while, because obviously if they start putting that out there and the content that's offered is the AI stuff is hallucinating, is very bad, I think the pushback would be so severe for both from users and creators that, you know, it just won't be a well-used and liked feature. But assuming it works at scale, I can very much see that for certain queries being actually a really good result.
I agree. One last question to the AI topic. How important do you think is the authenticity or authority based on the videos? Because so you're pushing out as a business, you're pushing out content, right? And then you're backing up this content with videos, maybe even firsthand videos. Do you think the AI is already that far that they're saying, wow, they've created real video about this topic, they must really know what they're talking about? So the authority basically rises and thus the rankings rise.
Yeah, I think there's a world in which sort of the EEAT framework applies to video as well, for sure. And that manifests in a bunch of different directions on YouTube and the way in which Google are thinking about stuff more broadly. So if a website itself has clear authority and authenticity and it's producing videos, that might mean that they're going to rank you for certain queries. The same thing with the YouTube channel, they can clearly tie to an organization and say, well, this organization has this YouTube channel, they're making stuff on this subject, we should probably put them out there. There's certain ways in which YouTube channels have verification in like the healthcare space to be an authority. So for sure, that level of authenticity and you know, just the quality that you're putting out there is going to help the visibility. So that means you need to be creating stuff regularly, it needs to be high quality, it needs to be authoritative. And if you're not doing that, somebody else in your space will, and they're going to reap the rewards in the coming years if you don't get ahead of it. So I think a lot of like businesses right now where they're sort of struggling to know what to do with AI, often it's because you've not done the right things 2, 3, 4 years ago, and you haven't created great authoritative content. And therefore you're like, well, you know, take the hint now with the same thing on video, like go and start to get ahead of the game here, because soon it'll be the only game that's played. And if you haven't got started, then, you know, other people will have done.
I agree. So before we wrap up and jump into the rapid fire questions, I have one question that is important. Tell us a bit about your vision behind your company, Organic Video.
Sure.
And what problem you're aiming to solve in the video marketing space.
Yeah, thank you for asking. So yeah, we're Organic Video and we solve the problem of organic video. So essentially, we do services, so like software and creative. So our services are like consulting. So we help businesses work out what to make and how to distribute it for their marketing. So we solve that question of what do you need to make? What do you need to get out there? What's going to work for you? What style should it be? All that kind of thing. And then we help businesses make it happen. So we then have our production wing that either we're going to make stuff ourselves, we're going to help you build a studio to make it yourselves and train you up. We're going to connect you with freelancers and we're going to kind of fill in the gap. So it's about helping businesses grow to the stage where they can start to produce stuff at scale with varying degrees of support. And usually for some videos, you need to do stuff yourself. And for some, you need a bit of extra help. So we offer that. And then on the other side, we have, you know, a bunch of software tools that we've built that help businesses solve some of those strategy questions as well. So we do a lot of reporting and research, like YouTube topic research and that kind of thing we can do at scale. So it's all about solving that problem of like, what should I make? How should I make it? And then how can I get people to watch it? So trying to solve that question that most businesses have around like video marketing organically. So this is, we don't do much paid stuff, really. We do some sort of ad creative, but mostly it's around organic. And it's, yeah, what should you make? How should you distribute it? And there's a part of that that's, yeah, sort of consulting and research and measurement. Part of that that's sort of solved with software so we can scale some of the questions and the work out that way. And then some of it is around production. So those are the kind of three things that we do.
I love it. And what's the best way to reach out to you?
You can send me an email at phil@organicvideo.com.
Perfect. That's amazing. Let's jump into a rapid fire round before we close up. So I'm just going to ask like short questions and you can answer short or a little longer if you like to. Yeah, YouTube versus Google Video Search. Which platform is currently more impactful for discovery of brand video content and why?
I would say it depends on the goals and it depends on the query. So some queries will have more visibility on YouTube, some will have more visibility on Google Video Search. In general, like YouTube is going to get you probably more views, but Google Video Search can drive more traffic. So it's a question of like, you know, what are you looking to achieve? What's more important to you as a brand?
So short form videos, biggest SEO advantage, like for Reels, TikTok and Shorts, what's the biggest SEO advantage?
I guess the biggest SEO advantage is just being visible for some queries that's the only content that's offered. Or if you like, for some queries, it's dominating more of the search results. So it gives you the opportunity to be visible for more queries and to have more visibility for certain queries.
Cool. One key metric for video success beyond just views.
Retention.
Nice. AI generated voiceovers, game changer or does it still need work?
I would say it's a game changer in certain regards because you can fix bad quality edits, you can tweak old historical content that's low quality. So it's amazing as for like audio engineers, but I don't think it's a game changer in terms of the sort of the creative output. No, but it is an amazing tool if you're like trying to fix bad audio, make, you know, tweak things where you need to change a line over time, that kind of stuff.
Cool. Transcript versus closed captions for SEO, which one is more important?
I mean, they're the same thing, I suppose. Closed captions is just embedded in the player. Transcript is sort of offered as a crawlable file. So the transcript's more important for SEO, but they both matter.
Okay. Biggest mistake brands make when trying to rank videos?
They worry too much about stuffing the title with keywords and then make it very unappealing to click on. And then they make the thumbnails too difficult to read in a very small size. So they overcomplicate the thumbnails. Thumbnails need to be simple and easy to like consume and view and understand at a small scale, like 120 pixels wide. And titles need to be clickable.
Nice. Ethical concerns in AI video. What keeps you up at night?
Oh, gosh. I worry about the scale at which just lies can be told and made to seem plausible through creative. And we're seeing this at scale, particularly in the world of sort of malicious foreign state actors, and that's happening a lot, and people don't have the wisdom to spot it. So particularly on Instagram, Twitter, and things like that, I worry about that a great deal.
I agree. Future of video thumbnails. Will AI design them perfectly?
No, it will design them probably quite well. But you'll need like a great designer to have that decisive vision of what you need to get out of it. So AI will probably get you 80% of the way there. And then you need a good, decisive, thoughtful designer to make something that stands out. The challenge with thumbnails, of course, is that when everybody's doing the same thing, something that's a bit different stands out. So it's always a game that you're kind of speaking to the wider culture and design trends in general. I mean, that's true for all brand and product design and UI design, is that when everybody's doing the same thing, things shift and you kind of do something else. It's how design, language, and communication evolves.
Exactly. One AI video tool you're most excited about right now?
I've been really enjoying Luma Labs, which is great for just making something from an image. So I've been using that a lot to create animatics. So essentially, if I'm working with a designer or we're planning out a shoot, I can go and make in a couple of hours like an AI dummy version of a video that looks quite good just based on a bunch of static images. And that will give you such a good idea of how the video is going to work that allows you to see the problems with it, the things that need adjusting before you've even picked up a camera. And that is really fun and very helpful.
Amazing. Amazing. What is the average video length you'd recommend for optimal, optimization for Google and YouTube?
I just think about it in terms of there's like different formats. So much like TV, it's like there's episodes, there's feature lengths, and then there's ads, there's shorts, there's snacks. So they all have like each length has a different kind of format, a different character, but they're all useful for different things. So you need to, what I advise companies to do is to work out what you're making the video for, go and have a look at the other videos on that topic or the other videos that have a similar character, and work out what the typical length for a ranking video is. And then look at the variance. And that'll give you an idea of how long your video should be for that given particular topic. You know, for example, around your iPad fixing, maybe a 4 to 5 minute video is the right length for that. And we'll know that by looking at what YouTube's deciding to surface. Probably a 20 minute video is going to be too long. Maybe a 30 second video is too short. So it's about just optimizing and adjusting the length of video according to the needs of a given topic or query or video style.
And you'd research that directly on YouTube by entering the search queries.
Yeah, you need to do it at scale. So, you know, I've got a tool that will do this. And, you know, we can basically work out what the average length and variance is for the top 1,000 videos for a given query. Okay. And then that will tell you, what you should really be, what you should be making.
Nice. My last rapid fire question. Best way to use video to answer an AI search query like, how do I do X? What's the best way to use video or how to create that video?
So for kind of simple how-to queries like that, you know, you're probably looking at medium short video that's somewhere between a minute and 10, minute and five, and you, it's a minute and 5 minutes, or a minute and 10 minutes. And it needs to probably have a combination of talking head, lots of close-up shots, be very instructional, keep it snappy, keep it quick. And make sure that you're just covering off the core thing that somebody is trying to solve in as succinct and easy to consume way as possible, which means normally fast cuts. It means a very succinct script, maybe a bit of music underneath, and keep it snappy.
And the fast cuts, it depends on the audience, right? If you have typically an older audience, you do lower cuts. If you have more like a Gen Z audience, you do faster cuts, right?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think it depends on the kind of, I would tie it more to the specific thing that you're trying to do. So okay. If it's, if it's like a cooking how-to, for example, the fast cuts are just going to be there to kind of add pace and add dynamism, but you're still going to want like something that is probably 4 to 5 minutes in length if you're going through a full complicated system rather than like 30 second boom, 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 boom. So, but you still want the fast cuts and you still want the like movement and the dynamism that means moving from the person to the shot, the wider version of the kitchen, the specifics of the saucepan, whatever it might be. So I think there's that gives motion and gives movement.
Amazing. Phil, thank you so much for the interview. It's been amazing. And thank you for sharing all the knowledge. And if you want to see Phil again, I mean, you can definitely catch him on some of the conferences he's talking on all over the world. And obviously also SMX Advanced in Berlin this year. It's going to be amazing. And yeah, it's always been fun to talk to you. And it's so good to understand more how the workings are on YouTube. And you know how AI and video is coming together and how that's impacting each other. So thank you again. And everybody who wants to work with Phil, please reach out at his email. We've put everything into the show notes. Also a link to Organic Video, his company. And then, yeah, see you very soon.
Thank you very much. Great pleasure.
Das war's für diese Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Bis zum nächsten Mal.